Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, two of the top lobbyists in the state, Mike and Alfredo Alonso, for the whole show on all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Your business workers' comp company should be your partner. The Pro Group Customer Care Team brings you effective risk management training, support, and web tools at no extra cost to you. We maximize the safety of your employees and business every day. Pro Group is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with information and resources at your fingertips. We ensure your employees' safety and that your premium's in line. When you're a Pro Group member, you have the team that's looking out for you. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you. Call for a no-obligation quote today.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Schaff, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Schaff.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're delighted to welcome back to the program after too long of an absence, Mike and Alfredo Alonso, two of the top lobbyists at the Nevada Legislature. Pleasure to have you both on the program.
Thanks for having us, Sam.
Thank you, Sam.
First thing I want to ask you about was the news just broke as we're taping this, which is Faraday Future is pulling out of Apex in Southern Nevada, and that was going to be the big auto manufacturing deal. Dan Schwartz apparently was right.
Well, I think he's right in the sense that there's risk with all of these projects. The state has to take that risk. You know, you could have said the same thing about Tesla, and I think that's going to be a huge success ultimately. So, and the Faraday project's not done yet. I think there are financial issues that are more about the largest investor in the company, not necessarily the company. So, you know, I think it's a little premature to start putting nails in that coffin. But by that same token, I don't think the state had any choice but to make that deal. And I think I would tell you that I would do it again today, if I were a legislator, because I think the chance of those jobs is important.
Well, and, you know, we did an interview with the lady that heads up the Douglas County Airport. And she was talking about that they are feeling the Tesla effect of more companies wanting to come in that are associated with Tesla and other companies that are out at TRI. And so it's definitely paying off for a lot of people in the state.
Well, isn't it also important to North Las Vegas and the state for the whole infrastructure that's going in at Apex? Whether Faraday stays or doesn't stay or is successful or not successful, I think that will attract other businesses and will be a great economic development project for the state and for North Las Vegas.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that Roger Norman at TRI really laid the groundwork for how a park should be successful, which is it has to have the infrastructure first. Otherwise, people are just not going to go there.
That's right.
Well, and remember that the Calcan folks were the first to come into the park in Northern Nevada, and it was about building a bridge that ultimately opened that park up to all those different businesses. So I'm not so sure that this is much different.
And, you know, what an exciting time. You're looking at housing prices. Numbers came out over the weekend, and the amounts for places like Carson City are through the roof. They're going up $20,000-$30,000 a month. I mean, that's insane. I'm not saying they're getting that price, but that's what they're asking.
Right. And but it's insane, but it's kind of scary, too, because it sort of harkens back to, you know, what started this whole thing in Nevada, at least with the foreclosure market and everything else. But hopefully we can maintain it and we don't have the same structural problems that we had, you know, pre-recession.
Well, and also they don't allow the liar's loans, things like that before, where people can just fog up a mirror and get a loan. It's a little bit more difficult to do that these days.
Hopefully.
Let me ask you, and we've had enough breathing space between the legislature and as the time we're taping this, what is your reflection on the accomplishments at the legislature?
Well, I mean, I think there were some significant accomplishments I think if you talk to the governor, I think he feels pretty good about his package. He got most of what he wanted. I think the debates on minimum wage and many of the other issues that are important to Democrats were out as well, and I think those debates are healthy. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with a new governor and what relationship the legislature has with that new governor going forward, because a lot of those the issues that you saw this session will be back. And so I think that's going to be a very interesting part of where Nevada goes over the next 10 years.
Were you surprised that ESAs became such a big deal, but then at the end went away?
I wasn't really surprised that they were a big deal. I mean, you can kind of see that happening during the whole process after last session. I mean, but if you go back to last session, just to kind of go back to the background, I mean, the ESA program that was passed by the Republicans and signed into law was very different than I think what people ultimately thought it was supposed to be. I mean, it was intended to be a fairly small program that was for people who were in public schools and really to give them a choice to go somewhere else. It wasn't necessarily for them to be able to go to a private school. It could have been that they could go from a public school to another public school just in a different area that was a better school. Or it was a transportation issue or something else. But no, it grew into a very controversial issue. And I don't think at the end that we were all that surprised that it kind of went away, because I don't think anybody, whether they were Republicans or the governor, wanted to hold up the entire session for one issue that they were never going to get past the Democrats.
The Democrats had the Democratic blueprint from day one. How do you feel that they did with that?
I think maybe going back to the first question you asked, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of those issues, whether it was sick leave or minimum wage, a lot of those employer-related kind of issues that were in the blueprint either didn't come out of the legislature or were vetoed by the governor. And so I think the relationship with the next governor, as Fredo said earlier, is going to be really critical, because I think the Democrats are probably going to control both houses next time, and who's governor is going to be really important to what happens with that blueprint.
All right, so let's talk about who potentially could be governor. Steve Sisolak obviously is running for governor. Who else do you think is going to be in this race? Do you think Chris Gee is going to take the bait and run? It seems like online, at least on Facebook, a lot of people are asking her to run.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think it's early. You know, we're basically 30 days out from the legislative session. However, I think everyone is salivating for various scenarios. You know, obviously, if Chris runs, that could be a significant problem for Commissioner Sisolak. But it's also going to be a big problem for the Democrats, because the question is, can Chris win a general election? And that's a problem that you've seen for years with Danny Tarkanian. He wins primaries, but he very rarely, he's never won a general. So that's your problem, is when you have a polarized situation, and it's happened in other states. It's starting to happen in Nevada, where your spectrum, your Democrats, your Republicans are either too far to the right, too far to the left, and then when you're expected to come to the middle, you can't. And that is going to be a very interesting scenario for people like yourself, Sam, to see who actually jumps in this race. It's no different in the Heller Senate race. If Dina Titus runs, that could make that race very, very interesting.
Mike, were you surprised that Senator Reid bypassed Dina Titus and threw Jackie Rosen into the fire there?
I guess I wasn't surprised. I mean, just kind of given the history, and I mean, he and Dina haven't been close, and he hasn't supported her in other races. And
do we know why?
I don't know why.
I mean, Marlene Lockhart, who's very close to Dina Titus, earlier today said, don't know why. I mean, is this the great secret? Because this is the third time now that Senator Reid has gone in a different direction.
Yeah, I don't know why. And I think Congressman Titus could easily win that primary. So, you know, it's going to get really interesting, at least in that primary. And then I think, you know, Dean's got his hands full in a general no matter what. But the whole thing is going to be interesting.
Did it surprise you, Alfredo, that Jackie Rosen, you know, just a few months into her term as a congresswoman, a lot of people on the Democratic side are saying, hey, we worked so hard to get her into that congressional seat, and that's not the easiest congressional seat to occupy on either side. That all of a sudden, a couple of months in, she's running for Senate.
No, it doesn't surprise me at all. Actually, I think
really?
I think if you have a seat that has historically it was Heck's seat, difficult for a Democrat to win, and now you have a situation where you know the risk is maybe lessened a little bit. To run for the Senate, and with the Dems trying to get, I mean, obviously it's a seat that they feel is vulnerable. I still think at the end of the day, it's still going to be an uphill battle for the Democrats in this case. But it makes sense. It makes some sense for her to run. She doesn't have much of a record yet, so you know she can still keep working on her positions without having anything to prove one way or another how she would vote. So I think it's a smart move by the Dems.
Has the state changed enough, Mike, between the time Dina ran last time against Jim Gibbons to today where she would have a better shot? I think it was about a 4-point difference when she ran for governor.
Well, I think the state's changed a lot. It's a blue state, but I also think that the whole Trump factor is going to weigh in. And we don't, you know, I mean, what that turns into, I assume you're talking about whether Dina's got a chance against Heller. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of Republicans could be tied to Trump one way or the other, which could be good or bad depending on which side you're on. Right now, Heller's kind of in the Trump doghouse, and that may be a good thing for him. It may not be a good thing. It's just going to, it really is interesting, and we're going to have to wait and see how that all works out and what Trump looks like, especially in a state like Nevada in 2 years.
All right, let's take a break. More with Mike and Alfredo Alonso when we come back.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday. Trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Mike and Alfredo Alonso, two of the top lobbyists in the state. Mike, I want to pick up with you on Dean Heller. He certainly is in a tough situation at this point in time. But he's been in tough situations before when he was running for CD2 and he had Sharon Angle pulling to the right of him. Do you think that Danny Tarkanian is likely to jump into this race?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell at this time. He could jump in the race. I didn't get the sense of his comments the other day that he was, I mean, if he was that excited about it, I think he would have jumped in then. But maybe he's waiting to see what kind of support he gets. And but I wouldn't count Dean Heller out. I mean, as you said, he's had tough races in the past, and 2 years is a long time, and how the health care bill ultimately turns out and other things in Congress, whether there's, you know, the president can get a tax package on and what side Heller's on that and just other issues. I think ultimately Dean's a good campaigner and he's well known, and I wouldn't count him out yet.
Well, and the other question is, how much control will the actual candidates have over their campaigns when you know that in a Senate race like this, there's going to be way more outside money than there is money from inside the state?
Agreed. I think the candidate's going to have some, you know, he's going to be limited in what he does because of the amount of outside money that's going to come into the state. It's going to be interesting to see where that gets focused. But like Mike said, I think you can call him vulnerable, but he's still the incumbent and he's a good campaigner. He's an attractive candidate and he's going to be tough to beat. There's just no way around it. And so again, how much the national sentiment, ultimately affects Nevada, the various organizations, the Reed Factor, all of those things are going to weigh in. And at the end of the day, we're also finding that, running against Trump doesn't necessarily get you a win. So will the message be honed? Will it be different? I don't know.
And you guys were saying that Nevada is now a blue state. Do you feel that strongly? Because, in the last election cycle, we were still a purple state. I mean, there was way more money. We were one of the 11 battleground states.
Well, I think the Democrats are going to have 100,000 voter registration edge. The state went to
Clinton. But they have to come out, though.
But they have to come out. And I think that's one thing that, obviously in the 2014 election cycle, things happened that we hadn't seen in a very long time. And I think that was a lot of it was related to turnout. I just think the Trump factor is there that it would, in a non-presidential year, it will bring people out just because he's controversial. And I think the turnout will be high.
And do you think Donald Trump will be visiting Nevada during this next cycle?
I would think so.
I would think so as well. I think depending on how he feels about, keeping the Senate Republican, which I'm assuming he will, do his part as the president and sort of the leader of the Republican Party. But again, that may or may not hurt the candidate depending on the message of the Democrats. Clearly, the message they've been using so far has not been working in other states. I don't know if it'll work in Nevada.
And also interesting that you have the Sheldon Adelson, Steve Wynn, Phil Ruffin factor in Nevada, three prominent billionaires who are very supportive of Donald Trump.
Absolutely. Yeah, he'll be here for sure.
All right, let's take a break. More with the Alonzos when we come back.
Sully Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature Build Your Own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Mike and Alfredo Alonzo, two of the top lobbyists in the state of Nevada, and two gaming experts as well. I wanted to bring up SLS. SLS is in the process of being taken over by the people that own the Grand Sierra Resort in Reno. And I think that they have done a phenomenal job of taking a property that opened in 1978 and making it look like one you could drop on the strip. Do you think Las Vegas is in for a surprise when Alex Morello comes into town? A good surprise.
a good surprise? Hard to tell. You know, that property's just the location of it is difficult because you don't have the walk-up traffic that you have further south on the Strip. And the projects that were going in that direction haven't really – Genting, you know, Fountain Blue still is kind of nowhere. So you don't have any projects that are going to happen anytime soon that I think are going to drive traffic down to that – to the old Sahara property. And I think because of those factors, it makes it a really tough property. But he did do a great job in Reno with the GSR and put a lot of money into it, and it looks good, and I think it's operating well. But Vegas is a very different market than Reno, and I think that property's tough. We wish him the best of luck, but yeah, I think he's got his work cut out for him.
To say the least, but I mean his experience with driving, because the Grand Sierra is also a property that's away from the two concentrated areas of gaming, either downtown Reno or South Reno. And so he's had to combine 2,000 rooms, tourism, as well as locals to make the place work. And that would be the same kind of thing you'd have to do in Vegas, right?
Right. But again, with all due respect to our hometown, the competition in Las Vegas is significantly bigger. I mean, he's going to have to compete against the Bellagios and the MGMs of the world. That's a difficult task because they can offer more. There's got to be a reason why people are going to travel to a little bit of an off center strip area for his property. Now, can he do that? You know, obviously, if he can cut costs and still find a way to entice people to come to his property, maybe make it more. The idea was that it was going to be a boutique property that would bring people there. Can he do that? He's done that in Reno, but again, the factors are much different.
Lucky Dragon would be an example of a property that seems to be doing pretty well in a strange location.
Yeah, I don't know how well the Lucky Dragon's doing. I think at the end of the day, when you sort of you strip back the promotional things that properties do, especially at the beginning when they first open, and you actually look to see whether or not they're making any money. I mean, I've heard Lucky Dragon is struggling. Alfredo's point is Reno's different. I mean, locals frequent casinos that tourists frequent in Reno. You really don't have a bright line rule, demarcation between locals casinos and tourist related casinos other than, you know, Bonanza, Tamarack, some of those. I mean, in Las Vegas, there's a bright line rule, right? You have Station Casinos, Boyd, you have Michael Gaughan, you have those specific places that cater to locals, and you have the Strip. And a lot of locals don't want to go to the Strip. And so you sort of have to pick one business over another. And I think the business model for the Strip, it's going to be tough for him to compete down there.
Okay.
Wish him the best of luck.
So the question of the Fountain Blue, is there anybody on the horizon as a taker for that? Or is it just priced too high?
God, I hope so. I think that is right now the albatross around Las Vegas's neck is there someone who's willing to come in and spend the money? And I don't know what the price is. I don't know what the price should be. The economy is getting better, but gaming has changed so much that the idea of simply building a massive facility and people will come isn't the case anymore. You know, it's a struggle, and it's a struggle every day. And you see that with gaming revenues. No one's quite figured out the new way of getting millennials, you know, other than some of the less traditional clubs, etc., where the nightlife has been attracting these young people. How do you get them to gamble? And that's going to be the issue with a lot of these properties is how do you get the younger folks to come to your property, which is going to be obviously something that's going to be a significant issue with a new property like Fountain Blue.
And that's where we have to leave it, gentlemen. Thank you so much. Let's do this again sooner than later, okay?
All right. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye now.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner Addiction Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
On our next broadcast, Elisa Cafferata from Planned Parenthood. We'll see you then.